When you need expert help and advice on issues affecting your business, NFU Cymru, we're here for you.
Want to get to know the people who produce the food that you eat? This is the place. Step this way and welcome to Rock and Roll Farming. And welcome to Rock and Roll Farming episode 135. I'm your host, Will Evans, and tonight I am heading up to Kirkcudbry in Dumfries and Galloway in Scotland to talk to shepherd and coffee business owner James Rees. James, how are you and how was my pronunciation?
It was pretty good, actually. I've heard a lot worse. We used to get Kirkcudbry is a good one.
Well, we're living in Wales, and you being from South Wales, we're kind of used to people mispronouncing where we live, aren't we? But yeah.
I didn't have to be pissed me for my Scottish pronunciations.
Yeah, because you're from South Wales, and we'll get into your journey to Scotland later. But tell us about growing up down there in the South.
So I grew up in a village called Pendaren, which is right on the I think it's the last village in the Brecon Beacons National Park. So It was a great place to grow up. Nice little village, had like a post office shop and pub and everything you needed. Kind of just a small rural kind of farm village. It's got probably at one point was most well known for its hill sheep ram sales, but now it's probably better known for the Welsh whiskey distillery.
I had a bottle of Pendaren for Christmas. It's amazing how that's taken off, isn't it? It's gorgeous.
Yeah, it's right opposite the primary school I went to school at, and I remember a lorry crashed into it once and saw that, and then it just stayed derelict, and then eventually, like, next thing, kind of a few local business people took it over, and now it's flying, I think. Right? My grandparents had shares in it and turned it down, and I think they're kicking themselves now.
Do you ever see any Pendaren Welsh whiskey up in Scotland, or is it not allowed north of the border?
Oh, yeah, no, I think you get in Tesco's. I think I got four bottles in the house, I think, various ones.
I'm very, very pleased to hear that your accent is a hybrid between South Wales and Scotland, by the way. I'm very much enjoying it.
Yeah, it's a strange one, mate.
All right, what was it like then growing up down there in sort of sleepy rural South Wales?
It was good. So for the most part, I had a kind of a funny childhood in that, like my parents got divorced when I was about two, I think.
Okay.
So like me and my mum lived with my nine and tied in Pendaren. Mm-hmm. And we moved out, and then we moved back in, and then my parents got remarried. So like I was in between Pendaren and then Hirwain, which is the next village down, which is like more of a valleys type valleys village, which is home to Tower Colliery, which was the last kind of working mine that was open in South Wales. It was good. Like, you know, we had like they were farming community. There was farms. Like some of my friends kind of rented cottages on the farms and and things. We were always on farmland, or like the beacons were right on our doorstep and things. So yeah, it's a great place to grow up, and like I think kind of leaves you grew up around hills and stuff. It's always been something with skates and things.
Yeah.
There was always something to do that wasn't just, you know, sat indoors kind of playing on the PlayStation, which was also excellent, obviously.
But, is that where your initial interest in farming came from then, growing up though? Because you're not from a farming background, are you?
No, like kind of, I've looked back into like family history and things, and there's like, you know, we had a lot of farms and stuff in that area at one time, kind of, especially like Ystafell and back towards Brecon. There's a big family history there, and a family history on my dad's side in Gloucester farms, but they all kind of petered out long before I came along.
Mm-hmm.
I just liked running around the farms and seeing things happen, and I guess it always just stuck in my craw, really. Like, it was always something I thought I would do one day, but in school it was never really, even being in a farming community, like, you know, the farming kids did the farming and that was it. Like, I never did young farmers or anything like that, but it was clearly, there was a seed in there somewhere. Like, I don't know whether it's a genetic thing in there or what, I don't know, but it's always in there somewhere that I really wanted to try farming. Like poultry farming was something I was really interested into. Like, okay. That was kind of the first thing I was looking at. But it wasn't until after uni that I kind of got into farming. So
yeah, okay. What did you study at uni then?
I did a course called Music and Media Management. So it was essentially a business management degree, but they use like media and music companies as kind of the base for like a lot of your case studies and that.
Yeah. So, okay.
Before I went to uni, I did a lot. Like I was really into music and. Like I used to put gigs on in the valleys and things.
Did you?
Yeah, yes. I just did little bits. Like I did some. I used to do some. My mum used to work for a mental health charity, like way back when. So,
yeah.
Like we used to put some fundraising gigs on for that charity in the valleys as well. So
awesome. What kind of bands were you booking?
I just got kind of metal bands and punk and it was that mid 2000s metal scene in the valleys was kind of where a lot of it was coming out of then.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was really cool to be involved in that, and there was always gigs on and stuff. So that was something we used to do a lot of when we were teenagers. So
yeah. So did you?
Maybe it would be like a music industry career. Then I would retire to a nice small holding with all my money.
Is that what you wanted to do then when you went to uni and chose that degree? That's sort of where you saw your future career being.
That was kind of the initial thing. And then I went and we met people in the music industry. And am I allowed to swear?
Yeah. Oh, yeah, you can swear.
Full of pricks. Like, full of dickheads. And so that put me off. put me off early doors. Like, you'd think Simon Cowell's an outlier, but there's hundreds of them with less money. It was really off-putting.
Yeah.
Like, really early doors. And actually, I just had a really rough time at uni. Like I moved away and I think like I definitely didn't get the most out of it. I think probably that's where kind of some kind of early like mental health struggles kind of as a teenager just kept petered on into like my time at uni, I think. So I definitely didn't get as much out of it probably as I could have.
But
no, like Cheltenham was nice. Like Cheltenham's a nice place to live and played sport and things and went out on a Wednesday night and as you do, usual student life.
Yeah. So where did you take the degree afterwards? What did you do when you left?
While I was there, I'd always played sport and been into rugby and things. And I learned early on that I wasn't really interested in doing the stuff on the course. So I just kind of use the degree and just try to get practical experience in sports writing and things because I find it easy and enjoyable. So my course had like a year out, so I came back to the Wales and worked for a couple of rugby clubs and two football clubs just doing sports journalism and business development and stuff like that. So I thought, oh, maybe I'll do some sports stuff when I leave uni. So and then I couldn't find a job. Just got a job in an office and I was there and I absolutely hated it. Like I was, that's really then when I was like, right, I'm in the middle of farm country. Like let's give it a go. Like it can't be any worse than the office.
what a way to get into a career. can't be any worse.
I might as well give it a go now.
Brilliant. Yeah. Okay. So how did you first go about it then? Because presumably then you wouldn't have had a lot of contact in the farming industry or anything.
I didn't even ask my elbow. Like. Yeah. But I just started, like, obviously my girlfriend lives on, she's from farming stock. So
okay.
My wife now. Like, so we met our last year of uni.
Okay, you met at uni, yeah. Okay.
Yeah, so like our last year of uni. So like I'd come up here and like we met saw the farm and I just started reading Farmers Weekly because it was the one you could get hold of in like Sainsbury's. So just to like learn and get a bit of ideas. And like in the monthly columns, there was a farmer who was fairly local. And I just sent him an email. His contact details were in the Farmers Weekly. So I just sent him an email and just said like, you know, I'm just looking for some experience. I think I sent an email to him and I sent an email to a dairy farm who like were bottling their own kind of stuff at farmers markets. And Paul Westaway got back to me and I went over for a chat and then I was working weekends alongside the alongside my office job just to get experience. So like I was doing 5 days a week in the office and then the weekends on the farm to kind of just see if I liked it and see if I was any good at it. And yeah, that's how it kind of all started then. So
what was it that you liked about the job then?
It was great. I loved it. Paul's a really forward thinking farmer. Like, and he back then, like, so he had his own semen business that he was, you know, so he was working, exporting and importing semen around the world. And we had like a really big show team of Angus cattle at the time. Mm-hmm. So that was great. And then there was we had a small like finishing unit for blade farming.
Okay.
So they had cows and calves and things there coming in. So it was like everything, you know, like a modern farm, you know. So you'd see, you know, we were weighing things on a reg and other people were coming in, like we were having open days for people. So you were meeting all, you know, like people from, you know, DEFRA and what was EBLEX then, but it's AHDB, Beef and Lamb now. Mm-hmm. So we had banking people coming in. So like it was just a really, really good view into like what farming can be.
Yeah.
And I just really enjoyed working with stock, like that, especially the cattle and the bulls, prepping them for shows, things like that. It was just such a eye-opening kind of experience into like what modern farming was like.
Working there, well, did you feel that you found your calling in life then? When you've
it was something that was just like I felt quite good at it fairly early on, and
yeah,
like Paul was always off doing a lot of other things, so there was a lot of like I was lucky that he gave me quite a lot of responsibility early on. And it was good. Like I really enjoyed the stock judging and the showing aspect of it. Like I think I had like I'm not natural, but I seem to have enough about me to have like a decent eye for stock and things. So yeah, almost like it just seemed some elements of it just seemed to kind of come naturally.
Yeah.
Okay. Like so yeah, and it had enough. There was enough varied. Like it was a lot. Paul did a lot with like you know soil health and. Agronomy and science and things. Mm-hmm. So like that side of things really appealed as well. So I really enjoyed that, which is I was never good at science or maths or anything in school. So it was like a practical.
Yeah.
I guess I'm quite practical, I guess.
Yeah.
It was that kind of thing, the practical side of it and seeing it in action rather than just in like a textbook that kind of appealed to me. Like,
yeah. Okay. So how did you go from working there to ending up in Scotland?
I wanted to move back up here. So, and then I was looking for jobs here and there. And then earlier, my dad had a hip operation. So we just thought I would come up and help out on the farm while he was recovering from that, just like an extra pair of hands about and, see where that led us. So I was only at Paul's for about 10 months before we moved up here. Like, so, but, yeah, that's how we ended up moving to Kirkcudbright.
Okay. So what did you go straight into just working on the farm there or were you just helping out or how did you sort of plan your career at that choice at that point?
I'd say it's fairly the polar opposite of what I've been used to down there. Like it's more of a traditional kind of suckler unit up here. So there was already a fella working on the farm as well, so there wasn't a ton of I was used to like basically running a farm day to day on my own.
Mm-hmm.
And I came up here with not that much to do. So I was just looking at other things to do and I thought it would be a bright idea to get some sheep. So there was a dispersal sale on. We went and bought 15 in lamb ewes and then worried about them lambing in 2 months because I'd never worked with a sheep in my life.
That's awesome. So hell of a steep learning curve then.
Yeah, but I think I'm quite a quick learner, and especially with things with farming, it's like you don't really have much choice.
No.
If there's a lamb coming out and you need a hand, like you just got to get on with it.
Yeah,
like so, yeah, like you know, we had the vet in place, and like there were other farmers that I was helping out a little bit here and there that was good for advice and things. So, but yeah, just jumped in at the kind of the deep end. Yeah, it's really the deep end, but yeah, just jumped in.
Yeah. How did it go from there from buying a few in lamb ewes to doing contract shepherding work for other farmers?
Kind of by accident. Somebody asked me if I could help scratch some lamb's foot off. And then he asked me how much money I wanted. So I was like, oh, I thought I'm just going to give you a hand, but there we go. Yeah, so it just started with the odd job here and there. Like, we were building up the flock here. So it was just working out other things to do. And then it was kind of, it just helped people here and there. And then that became more regular. And then it was like, lambing every year. Yeah, just kind of. Everything else I seem to do just seems to just happen, and I just can't remember. It was an accident. It was like, oh, maybe if I help some other people, I might learn some stuff and get better. And then they offered to pay me. So,
just for people listening who might not know, what exactly does a contract shepherd do?
I think it differs. Like, for me, a lot of it was going in and either doing jobs for people, you know, like. If people needed their ears crutched and they were too, like, a lot of sheep around here, there's not really that many sheep farms in Dumfries and Galloway. A lot of it is either stores or like small flocks, mm-hmm. alongside dairy or beef units. So, like, I liked working with the sheep for the most part. But I think everybody who's ever worked with a sheep in their life will agree they're not always the nicest things to work with. But I enjoyed working with them, and most people around here maybe didn't. And it was either just needing an extra pair of hands with big jobs, or somebody saying, can you come and give me a hand, do this? So a lot of it was kind of helping with worming and, or dosing at times or crutching. Big jobs were like helping people out at shearing time. Mm-hmm. And then like the big jobs would be like going and lambing for people. Like, well, 1 year I lambed pretty much for 6 months. Like, so it's just, there's not enough work and, there's not enough work here, so like, just go and find work elsewhere, I guess. So
that's a tough stretch, lambing for 6 months. Jeez.
Yeah, that was rough. I got broken in the end. I started in Cornwall and then came back and did lambing here, then did local ones, and then finished like with outdoor lambing here. Like, so
yeah, jeez.
Yeah, that was a long one.
So how did you start with the blog and social media, and why did you start sharing your story and what you were doing?
Well, originally, obviously I'd done a lot of writing work, kind of with the sports writing stuff at uni. And I'm an only child, so my mum was in a constant contact. So I thought, maybe if I do a blog or something where I can write what I'm doing to, I'll get some bloody peace. So that's how it started. And then, social media was a good one just to meet other people and, like, see what other people are doing. And then it just kind of kept going, and I tried new things like interviewing other farmers and stuff, and mm-hmm. just to see it kind of grew from just this is what I'm doing, so I don't have to repeat the story every 5 minutes every time I speak to somebody. into sharing what we're doing, and like everybody else, just, you know, people haven't got a clue really what farming is like on a day-to-day basis, and just what it takes to get food to the, you know, to the supermarket shelves. So it was just showing what I was doing every day and kind of maybe what a bit of it was about, and just sharing what we were doing and maybe educating people a bit, I guess. Just kind of showing what day-to-day reality was like on a small farm in Scotland, I guess, yeah.
Did you enjoy it?
To start off with, yeah, I really enjoyed it. Yeah. I met loads of cool people, and like opportunities came out of it.
Yeah,
but I think kind of as my mental health started to deteriorate, like a big bit of it, like actually looking back on it, was I was doing stuff that I felt I needed to do, or like share and say things I felt like I needed to say because other people were doing it. Mm-hmm. And actually it became a really negative part of my life. It was there was a lot of kind of comparison going on, and like, why is this person at X point in their career or in their life and I'm not? This person's got way more sheep than I've got. Like, I guess there was kind of like imposter syndrome because I'd not come from a farming background. Mm-hmm. I would have felt like I was trying to play catch up, and I would never catch up with other people, mm-hmm. I guess. So like that kind of played into a bit, and like kind of then, like I would say after Brexit, it just got really nasty. Like, I don't know if that makes sense.
No,
like,
it does, yeah.
Like, farming social media was really good.
Yeah.
People were so supportive, apart from the odd dickhead. Mm-hmm. Like, not naming names, but I think we all know who I'm on about. Like, but, yeah. But then it just seemed to be like a switch turn. Like, you know, there was a switch, and then everybody just seemed to be having a go at each other.
Yeah.
Like, and especially as, like, a new entrant and things.
Mm-hmm.
Like, then... You started, didn't want to, you didn't want, I didn't want to share things in case, like, you just get pounced upon. Like,
yeah.
Like, which is fine on a good day. Like, you know, I'll hold my own. But, like, when you're already feeling shit about yourself,
yeah.
Like, having that when you're just trying to talk about what you do and, like, it's not, it's just not what you need in your day to day life, really, is it? Like, so.
No, I.
Yeah, it just becomes a negative thing.
Yeah, I entirely relate to that because last summer when I was sort of at my lowest, I was trying to sort of be on social media less for that exact reason. And then one day a guy sort of out of the blue sort of started having a go at me. I won't go into details, but it was at a bad time for me, and it really hurt, you know, and I could have massively done without it.
I think that's the thing. I think, like, if you're putting yourself out there as well, like, you know, mm-hmm. and you're feeling bad, but you're trying to put on a positive front and keep some kind of normality, like, you just don't need it, do you? Like,
no, exactly. So when did you first start realizing that things weren't right with your mental health? Was it at quite a young age or after uni? Or
kind of, I think things started probably kind of 13, 14, which I think is quite a common...
Yeah.
You know, the more I do stuff with mental health and, like, kind of read, I think that's quite a common thing.
Yeah.
Like, I don't know if it's, like, wounds kicking off or whatever as a teenage boy or what, and just things go off.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I would say that's when it started going off, and then I kind of just... And then it was just peaks and troughs, like, for the...
Mm-hmm.
Since then, really. Like, I think I had quite a rough time in uni, just not feeling great and, like, maybe not adjusting to it all... as I thought I kind of would have, not knowing what I wanted to do with my life and things, I guess. So, and then we moved up here, and I guess it was just a gradual decline then, like, I think.
Yeah.
Moving into a rural area and kind of isolation and kind of the financial stress of it all just all kind of built up a bit.
Yeah. Did you feel, because it sounds like from talking to you, you are happy in your job and in your work. So did you feel that when I had this, I was almost beating myself up because I felt like I had no right to feel like this. Is that, can you relate to that?
Yeah. I think, like, there were elements of, like, I'm always reticent when I talk about farming. I'm always reticent to blame. Like, farming wasn't, it's not farming's fault that. Like,
yeah. Yeah.
I ended up snapping and in tears one day. Like, mm-hmm. Because it's what I wanted to do,
yeah.
And huge parts of it were rewarding. But, like, you know, like, there's people who have got way more sheep than I ever had and things, and there's people who have got way more financial burdens and mm-hmm. disease burdens that we never had. But, like, that doesn't make your kind of problems any easier.
Yeah.
And I think just not talking about it and not sharing it just all adds up. So, yeah, I was doing what I wanted to do, but it was putting me in situations that weren't conducive to my having good mental health. And there were lots of triggers, like stress and things.
Mm-hmm.
And kind of losing stuff always stuck with me. Like, I think anybody who's worked with stock will relate to that.
Yeah.
And I always thought it would get easier, but it never got easier.
No.
Never. And the worst thing was, is, like, no matter how hard I tried to improve myself and the more I learned and stuff, like, especially with sheep, some days they're just going to die. Like, whatever you do, just like a human.
Yeah.
Know, some days they just, you can't see what's wrong.
Yeah.
Like, you know, we can work and try and improve things and put, like, you know, you can put worming and fluking and get everything, but, like, some days you just can't win.
Yeah.
And, like, they were things that I really struggled with. So, like, it just built up. And I think, yeah, like, it was just, farming was great, but also farming just kind of was pushing me towards the edge by putting me in situations like I just couldn't cope with anymore.
Mm. Yeah. How soon did you reach out and ask for help?
It was a gradual decline of over like 2 to 3 years.
Yeah.
Really. Like, and it was, you know, it was manifesting itself in different ways. Like, I think the good thing for me having Stark and the dogs was like it got me out of bed.
Yeah.
Because I had to go and do something. So, but then, like, you know, so like I couldn't handle stressful situations at all. Mm-hmm. Like, you know, I would like kind of get annoyed or angry or just being really shit moods. Like, so it was impacting like my life and like my relationships with other people and things. So I think it reached a point where it was obvious that like that couldn't go on.
Mm-hmm.
And it was either going to keep going downhill and it wasn't going to end well for anybody, or I could just do something about it. You know, like at least could go and speak. Like, I knew there was a mental health nurse locally, so I just went to the doctor in the end and just kind of was like, just told her how I was feeling. And like 2 weeks later, I was having therapy sessions with the local nurse. So, mm-hmm. And the worst thing was it all happened at lambing time. Like, I just.
Of course it did. Of course it did.
We were putting the bed together, like, for lambing. I just thought, I can't do this anymore. And I just started crying. Like,
yeah.
And I just never thought I was going to stop, ever. Like,
yeah.
I was in bed, I was in the shower, and I was just crying. Like,
yeah.
So, yeah, I was lambing here and then going to therapy sessions and then going back into the shed. So, we made the decision, like, the sheep had to go, and, like, I just needed a kind of a fresh start, I guess, and so that I could work on things. Because I just always thought I was always going to feel that way.
Yeah.
There was never, there's that, you know, the black dog follows your own kind of stereotype.
Yeah.
And I just thought, oh, right, I'm always going to feel shit. Some days are going to be fine. Some days are not. There's nothing I can do about it. This is just my life.
Mm-hmm.
And I just got to get on with it. But like the first thing kind of the nurse was saying was like, it's normal to feel this way. Like, and there's things you can't get rid of it. Like, you might not cure it, but there's things you can put in place in your life to make you deal with situations better. And, you know, so like that was a big eye opener that I could do something about it. Like, I didn't just have to feel like this forever.
Yeah. Well, I can relate to that definitely. Cause, you know, I think sort of blindsided me a bit last summer, but I think looking back, it's probably, I mean, I've certainly talked about that before, that the sort of black dog being there and, you know, ups and downs. And I think looking back, it's probably has always been there. And I've always sort of thought, well, that's just the way I am. But after having talked to the doctor and sort of seeking help, I've realized that, you know, there are things you can do, and you've just got to recognize it and sort of admit to yourself that it's okay. That was a big thing for me, I think.
I would always say to my owner that, you know, this is just who I am, this is what I'm like. Like, you know, I've just got a temper or whatever. But it was just like, I just was full of like stress and anger and depression, and I didn't have an outlet for it.
Mm.
So, like, it's not what I'm like. Actually, I think I'm a pretty nice guy and I'm a good laugh. And there was part of me, there was something inside me that was manifesting itself in my behavior. And I just had accepted that was me, but it wasn't. It was something else, you know. So being able to like adapt to situations and put things in place to like try and avoid things and avoid triggers or things that can kind of, like things I can do to make things better.
Yeah.
It's been what it's been about kind of over the last kind of 18 months or so, I guess.
Yeah.
Just learning to live a different reality, I guess. But
yeah. And do you feel that you're in a much better place with it now?
Oh, yeah. Like, I still have bad days. Like, I think anybody who follows, like, Found by Brews on, you know, I'm very open about my good days and my bad days.
Mm-hmm.
Like, because I want to use it as a, you know, as a platform to do some good, like,
mm-hmm.
So yeah, like some days are crap. Like, I had a really rough time over Christmas where like I just was really stressed out about stuff, and like people were, I just didn't want to talk to anybody, and
yeah,
And yeah, the days I just want to stay in bed and not do anything. But then other days are way better. And I can look at situations now that I handle totally differently to, you know. Like, that's a big thing for me, is being able to look at how I've changed my kind of outlook and my priorities and things.
Yeah.
Like what's important to me as a person.
Yeah.
So
a good friend of mine rang me last year and said that you won't understand what I mean now, but when you come through this, and you will, when you get to the other side of it, you'll realize that there are some very good things about this. You'll realize some things about yourself that will make you much sort of stronger and make your life better in the long run. And he was right. I didn't really get it at the time, but I do now. I totally get what he meant now. Can you relate to that as well?
Yeah. Like, kind of a big thing for me was going to the doctor before it got any worse.
Yeah.
But especially looking back at it now, like how bad it was, like, at the time, like, it didn't feel like it being in it. It just felt like I was having a bit of a rough time. But
yeah,
the way, like, the things that would just set me off, like, just don't bother me at all. Mm-hmm. Like, I came off social media altogether for a while, but I just needed to get that kind of out of my head, mm-hmm. and that kind of just hit a reset button, I guess, and try and build myself back up as a better person who can deal with things in better ways, I guess. Yeah. Like, I feel like a different person.
Yeah.
Like, I was looking back at photos from, like, our first lambing and things, and it just seems like a different person's life now. Like, thinking back of where I was as a person and, like, how I was feeling.
Yeah.
It's like, I feel like a different person.
Yeah. Do you think that, I mean, I guess this is a problem. I don't want to sort of make it too specific to the farming industry, but I mean, we are both sort of in the industry. And do you think that we're getting better at this? I mean, I would suggest we are. I mean, we're two guys now sharing our experiences on a podcast talking about mental health, whereas a few years ago, I just don't think that would have happened. So would you agree that we're getting more open an industry? And I mean, there's certainly more help available out there, isn't there?
Yeah, I think there's more. I think I see a big difference in the industry, and kind of when I had Solar Shepherd still going on Twitter, like, that was one of the first times I really kind of broached kind of how I was feeling, and I'd been to the doctor and things, and like I was expecting like a negative reaction from people.
Yeah,
and I didn't get it. I only got positive messages from people. Yeah, I think there's more acceptance of it. I think it's difficult in farming because, like, I was trying to explain it to somebody else on a different podcast I did recently, like, there's just so much just things that can go wrong. There's so much stress on farmers that people don't appreciate, like, at all. And you're getting attacked from outside the industry. There's an element of being attacked within the industry, like. And there's just that macho mentality that I'm a man, I just get on with it, stiff upper lip. You know, farming can be fairly traditional and slow on the uptake, just in general, like, as a community. But I think, I've seen big strides. And you see, you know, there are now people are a lot more open about talking about how they're feeling.
Yeah.
There's more support, you know, farmer-specific support. Like, you know, Yellow Wellies is not just like a safety thing. They do mental health campaigns.
Mm-hmm.
Like the work the young farmers are doing to just promote that it's fine. You know, like, there's definitely more, I think there's definitely more willingness to listen and be open about it.
Mm.
I think it has to be because people are dying, like, you know.
Yeah.
People our age, men our age, suicide is the biggest killer. And I think if you look at agriculture, it's such a massive problem.
Yeah.
If people feel like there's no support, and where they're going to turn, like, you know.
Yeah.
You soon get caught up in not having gone off the farm for ages. Like.
Yeah, and unfortunately, the statistics, you know, they're not getting better, they're getting worse, aren't they? So,
yeah.
You know, we've got to try and do something, haven't we?
Yeah. And I think that's the big thing for me is if I could talk about it, because I'm in that group of kind of men of a certain age who just need to get on with it. Like, I've been involved in farming since I left uni, like, you know, I've always played sport, you know, I'm in that stereotypical group of men
who
don't talk about it and then end up, you know, taking their own life.
Yeah.
If I can talk about it and one person sees that I've got help when I needed it, or like that, this is what I'm going through because I'm not better. People ask me all the time, are you better now? And I'm like, well, no, like that's not how it works. Like it's been a part of my life for 10, 15 years before I went to the doctor. It's not going to just go away.
No.
So, like, you know, like something's got to happen because people are dying when they don't need to.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. It's a big deal though. Talking about it, isn't it? And I've certainly found that, but like you, I've had nothing but a positive response, which sort of makes me feel that we are taking great strides and we're making progress. But you know, it is a big deal opening up. But as you say, if it makes one person hearing this listens and thinks, well, you know, here's two guys talking about their experiences and I feel like this and that's okay, and goes and seeks help, then I think, you know, I think that's us turning a negative into something positive, isn't it? I hope.
Yeah, and I think a big thing with kind of mental health is such a wide array of conditions. So, like, I think at the time I probably didn't think I was, you know, I didn't classify what was wrong with me as being like a mental health issue. Mm-hmm. I just thought I was angry and I hated everybody. Like, if one person sees, you know, I talk about how I'm feeling, and it's someone who, oh, hang on, that's how I feel.
Yeah,
because it's happened to me. I've seen other people talking about how they feel or what they've been through, and I'm like, wait a minute, I recognize a lot of that in me. You know, then you've done a job, haven't you? Even if it's like an early warning system for somebody to think, yeah, oh, maybe if I try this, I might make me feel better. Or actually, I identify a lot with that person, and maybe I can find out what I can do about it.
Right? Yeah.
I think then you've won, haven't you? You've done what you set out to do.
Yeah, I think so. Okay, so why don't you tell me about Farm Boy Brews? You mentioned it before. How did you get from being a contract shepherd to being, well, to having your own coffee business?
Like everything else, I think it's just by accident. For me, I was just looking for other things to do. So, like, farming wasn't the sole kind of income, or like, so I didn't get back into that cycle of just not leaving the farm. And, you know, so I was looking for other things to do. So I worked for the National Trust for a little bit, which was good, but it was not like a reliable thing. For me, so I just thought, oh, I've got some savings, like let's sell some lambs, let's put this into some barista training, because I always thought, like, I progressively got more and more into coffee over like the last 3 to 4 years of being here, and it was the worst place to move in the history of time if you wanted to get into like specialty coffee. But like,
so I was just gonna say that.
Yeah, so like, I thought, right, I'll do some trading, see if I'm any good, or if I'm just, you know, just I make coffee at home and I think it's fine.
Yeah.
So I did a bit of training up in Livingston. Loved it. Did it. Passed. Great. So I thought, well, maybe I'll look for like some part-time coffee work. And it just doesn't exist. Like, especially around here. Like, with our nearest specialty coffee shop is in Dumfries, which is like 45 minutes to Naira away.
Yeah.
Like, and they're a charitable kind of, they connected with like a local church. So they have only got limited hours and funds and things. So like, there wasn't any work going there. Like, nobody was obviously going to give a, if I go, hi, I'm a shepherd and I like coffee, can I have a job? Like, you know, are you high? Like, so, yeah, I just couldn't find an avenue into the industry. So I thought, I want to do more with mental health. I want to raise more awareness. I want to put that at kind of like the heart of whatever I do going forward.
Yeah.
Maybe I can just find somebody, we'll roast some coffee, I'll raise some money for charity. Just a one-off thing. And then maybe somebody might, you know, it makes the CV look good or whatever, and somebody might give me a job.
Yeah.
And I did that, and like within a couple of months, like we were launching it. I wanted to launch on World Mental Health Day in October because mm-hmm. that made sense. And then we ended up launching it at like the Edinburgh Coffee Festival. Like we got an opportunity to share a stand with a friend that I'd made through coffee. We launched it. Like people loved it. People loved the idea. Like it was so rewarding. Just people coming up to us and like, what's this about?
Yeah.
And I could say, this is why we're doing it. This is my experience. And people are just would just open up immediately about what they've been through, or they're knowing somebody else and like, what can I do? Let's have some, let me buy some coffee. And then like people locally were like, can we have your, can we sell your coffee in our cafe or whatever? And mm-hmm. you're like, all right, okay. it just steamrolled. It was like getting into, I didn't set out to make it a coffee business. It's just kind of happened. And now I'm trying to keep up with it. Like, it's exactly like the, like getting into farming. Like,
yeah. So what's your favorite coffee? It's a Sunday morning. You've just got out of bed. You're going to make yourself a coffee. You've got an hour to spare. What are you going for?
I like to make filter coffee. That's a big thing for me. It's a bit more, you have to put a bit more effort into science and actually have a manual like impact on your brew and stuff. So, and also like when I was having a shit time on the farm, it would be good for me. It was something to concentrate on for 5 minutes that would take me off. Like, I think like, yeah, I was going to die, or like, you know, like, I've got to go and bring in these batch of blackies off the hill and then just not going to play ball. Like, so it was just a way to like, think on something else. So like, but then at the minute I'm making a lot of French press, like a lot of cafetière coffee at the minute. Mm-hmm. Like if you come to our house, like we've got two espresso machines because I bought another one for the business, and I've just bought another one on eBay when my business is closed, which seems sensible. Like I've got kettles, grinders, we've got, you know, I can make pretty much anything. So it was one thing other than sheep I spent my money on while we were farming. So like it just depends. Like Sunday, I think you can't go wrong with a good cafetière on Sunday. It's a very Sunday morning.
Yeah.
Make a big pot and we can just cheer it together and like sit and listen to the radio or whatever. Like I think that's a good Sunday morning coffee.
Definitely. So do you have a very good taste for it? Because, I ask this because I have probably, listeners won't be surprised to learn, quite an unsophisticated taste. So I love coffee, but you know, when you hear people going, well, there's hints of vanilla and all that jazz, I can't do that. But then I have a very poor sense of smell. So, but I just know if I like something or if I don't. So have you got a very good descriptive way of describing different coffees?
I don't think, like, you know, I'm not old Ollie off of Saturday Kitchen. but I think I've got a decent enough palate. Like I used to work for a chocolate company back in South Wales that my friend had. So like I was always doing stuff with like food and flavours and things. Like I've not by any means got the greatest palate in the world. But like the more I drink, the more I do, like the more tastes and comparisons I do, like the better it's getting.
Yeah.
Like you're quite lucky when you import coffee, somebody kind of samples it at the other end as well. So and they'll write down what they think.
Yeah.
You know, a flavor profile is, and then so you've got a rough guideline when you kind of order samples as to what you should expect. So,
sure.
I'm getting better at it. Like, I know what I like, and my wife Iona, she likes the basic stuff. So she's my everyday. I like something. Will everybody like it? See if Iona likes it. If she goes, it tastes like coffee. I like it. We're probably all right.
You're probably all right. where does your coffee come from? Where do you import it from?
So, like, a big thing in specialty coffee is kind of, it's like farming. Farming led me to get into coffee.
Yeah.
Like, I was like, there's all this sustainability and traceability elements to farming and where our food comes from. Yeah, I'm drinking coffee by the gallon. I have no idea where it comes from. So, yeah. Like, a big thing is traceability and, like, sustainability to make sure, like, farmers get as good a price as they can.
Yeah.
So, like, try and, where I can, either, like, source things direct or through, you know, from a group, like, a cooperative or, like, a group of farmers. And just kind of, there are, you know, there's specific green importers who work with, you know, have good practices, import through them usually and get them, I just go on the weekly price list and see what what to bait and look at what I might like to do next. At the minute, we've got the most recent coffee we have is from a farm called Bom Jesus in Brazil. So there's a Brazilian fellow who's mad as a buck of frogs, lives in Cambridge, and he imports directly from 2 or 3 farms.
Okay,
so we get it from, he imports it for us and other people in the industry as well. Like, so okay. Yeah, it's nice to know. Just like it's nice to know where that, you know, leg of lamb you've got, where that's come from. It's great to know where your coffee's come from, how the farmers grew it, and that they're getting a decent, you know, they're getting a decent price, or as decent a price as kind of possible. You know, coffee farmers in the same boat as you know, British farmers, is the prices aren't brilliant for people, and then for the most part, you know, they live in the third world, so they have a rougher time than we do. But yeah, so it just depends. Like, you know, we've had a coffee from El Salvador in, we've had a blend before that was had bits of Indian coffee and bits of Brazil, and yeah, so it's just seeing what's out there, what we like the sound of, and then we get kind of samples and do some coffee cupping to see what we like.
So when the coronavirus lockdown stops and life goes back to normal, would you ever like to visit any of those countries and see it growing and visit some of the farms where it's grown?
Definitely. A guy I know works for like a European importer, and I'm actually going on a virtual trip on Friday to go in. They're using, because we can't, because nobody can go to Origin.
Yeah.
They've kind of got like a Guatemalan coffee tour organized, kind of chat to farmers and things and see how things are out there. So that'll be a good one. That'll be my first Origin trip. But yeah, like to go out, you know, I know a lot of people who do go out to Origin, and so they can have more, build a better relationship with people, and kind of have more of a involvement in the farm on the ground. So yeah, that would definitely be something really cool to do one day.
Fantastic. And what about the mental health aspect of the business? You mentioned at the beginning when you first started selling it, but how does it work in practice? How do you support mental health charities through sales?
So when we started up, we picked a charity called Tiny Changes, and for the we made a depresso espresso blend, because
I love that. By the way, I'm gonna call this show depresso espresso. By the way,
excellent. That was originally just to be meant to be like one coffee, and that was it. But like the branding was so good, people loved the name. It got people in and got people talking.
Yeah,
we decided like that'll be our house roast, so we'll always have that on.
Yeah,
and 10% of our profits off those we'll donate to charity. I had a phone call this morning with another charity that we've got quite involved with. So like new tax year, we're going to be working with them in Scotland. And that's something where I can have a lot more of like a hands-on involvement and build like a really good relationship with.
Yeah.
Like they've got kind of centers for people locally that we go in and help out and just hang out with people and have a chat and talk to them about coffee. And they were a lot of the farmers markets that we started doing before everything got locked down. So I'm really excited as of this morning. Like, we've got a new charity partner. Like,
fantastic.
It's a proper partnership. And like, I think we'll be announcing that when we reopen. So that's exciting.
Yeah, brilliant.
Yeah.
Brilliant.
Yeah, that's more than just, it's not just like, here's a bit of money that we can chuck in it. Like, yeah. It's like, what can I do? I can come in and do more stuff like at a local level as well. So I'm really excited about doing more practical stuff.
Yeah,
to kind of, you know, raise awareness and help people out and things. Yeah, it's all
fantastic.
Cool.
Fantastic. And what about subscription service, and where can people buy the coffee from online?
So we've got a website, which you can find. So we sell online. We're looking at launching a subscription service. I'm just trying to work out how to do it online, because we just it's just a one-man band. I'm just trying to work everything out myself. that's the ideal. Will be the next one is that people can sign up and direct debit every month, and new copies come out to them by post. Yeah, like the bad thing with coronavirus is it's shut me in, and I'm going a bit cabin fever. But it is, it's give me a chance to sit down, get the business plan out, work out maybe a premises, and like get a coffee roaster in and just get doing it ourselves, so we can do a lot more. You know, get a premises and roast the coffee and do everything in house, and Yeah, it'll enable us to grow and get more stockists and do more things. And, you know, we've been really lucky that stockists have come to us locally. And, like, we've got one which is a really great cafe in Birkenhead that have just got behind us. There's a lassie got in touch with us who is also works, she lives and works on a farm, but they've got a Land Rover with a coffee machine in the back.
Oh, cool.
So, who've spoke to us about us providing them with coffee for events and things. So, brilliant. The next big thing is get running again and just get into, you know, find more people who want to get involved and buy the coffee or like sell our coffee in the shops. Like farm shops is probably the next one, I think, is,
yeah,
you know, because we've got a mental health link, the farming link and things, you know, just yeah, I'm still just trying to work it all out myself.
It seems like a natural fit, that, doesn't it? I'm sure, yeah, the farming industry will get behind you. And I mean, you sent me some of your coffee. I think it was before Christmas, and it was really good. I mean, I loved it, and I subscribed to a coffee service already. But as soon as you get yours up and running, I'll bin them off and sign up to yours.
I've spoken to a couple of people who I knew through Solway Shepherd and Farming who has stayed in touch, and they've got a farm shop back in Gloucester. I think hopefully they may be our first farm shop on board. So
yeah,
it's exciting. A former guest of the podcast as well.
So, oh, really? Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Awesome.
Yeah.
Brilliant. Okay. So, well, yeah. Well, I suppose anyone listening who has got a farm shop or retail outlet or anything, get in touch with you.
Yeah, please do. Yeah. Or if you just want to find out about coffee, chat, anything. I just love chatting to people.
Yeah. Or baseball.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, definitely baseball. We're starting on baseball.
that's probably another podcast.
Yeah.
No, that's great. I mean, it's really, really cool to hear that, hear your future plans. It just sounds like it's going to go from strength. And yeah, really, really good to hear that.
Hopefully. It seems to be doing it for me, and I'm just trying to. That was the thing, like when we started, it felt like it was all rolling downhill, and it just seemed that it would be more effort to stop it than it would to just carry on and keep up with it. So,
yeah.
It's good for me as well. It stops you overthinking things, you know, kind of. I think when you have things going around in your mind that are not always the most positive, like I think you can overthink things and then self sabotage, which is something this hasn't really allowed me to do, and it's been so positive so far, it's just kept me going.
Yeah, no, I can see that. Okay, right then. Yeah, I was flying by, so we better wrap this up with the five hard-hitting questions, if you're ready.
Yeah.
Okay, looking forward to asking this one. What is your all-time favourite song?
Oh, that's tough, because I think it depends what mood I'm in a lot of the time.
It's really difficult, isn't it?
But I think one song, which I think is probably maybe the greatest song ever written, definitely the best for whatever mood you're in, making you feel great, is Dancing in the Moonlight by Top Loader. And I will not have anybody say anything different.
That's a great choice. Reminds me of university. It was always on in the bar at uni. Brilliant.
Yeah. It was Jamie Oliver's first like song on his TV show, I think, as well. I think that's why I first heard it when I was a kid. And it's just a banger, isn't it?
Yeah, yeah. I'll put it on the outro music. Okay, if time wasn't an issue and you had forever to master a skill, what would you choose?
This is an easy one. Skateboarding.
I wasn't expecting that.
I skateboarded a lot when I was a kid.
Yeah.
And I just got back into it. Like, I've bought a skateboard. I've got a Farm Boy Brew skateboard with my logo on it.
Have you? That's really
cool. I'll send you a picture. It's great.
Awesome.
And it's just another thing that gets me out of the house and doing something.
Yeah.
It's another thing, bit of physical exercise, bit of like mental, like trying to. So at the minute, I'm just popping ollies in the living room. Like, just. Awesome. I'm already trying and I will never master it, but no. Yeah, skateboarding.
Awesome. Okay, what's the best event you've ever attended?
Oh, we did a lot of good sporting events. Been to a couple of Rugby World Cups.
Yeah,
they were good. Been to the Netball World Cup, which was really good.
Yeah,
my wife's really into netball and I am a closet netball fan.
When you watch it, it's surprisingly, well, it's ultra competitive, isn't it?
Yeah, it's so good. It's such a fascinating sport.
Yeah.
Like, and we get a burly and watch like all the Australian stuff. Like, we went to New Zealand and Australia recently, and I went to the Collingwood Magpie shop and saw the Collingwood Magpies netball team training, which was exciting. But I think the best one was we went to see the Chiefs play the Crusaders at the FMG in February, and that was I went as a Hurricanes fan, and I absolutely loved the whole Waikato region. It was unreal.
Yeah, yeah.
And I hated Wellington. It was the worst place I've ever been in my life. I've just changed my allegiance totally. I'm a full on Chiefs fan. The ground was unreal. Like everyone's singing. Oh, it was like King's Home without being in Gloucester, which is always the point.
Brilliant. Okay. Now this is a really difficult question, but I've had a lot of fun with it. If it was decided that all countries would be abolished and the entire Earth would be one unified political body, what would be the capital city of Earth and what would its flag and anthem be?
Capital cities are always disappointing.
Yeah.
Capital cities are crap. So I'm gonna go practical. We'll give it to Brussels. They've already got all the logistically. They've got it nailed. Brussels gonna be the capital. And
great
then,
beer, great beer too. Great beer.
There. Yeah, there you go. Brussels nailed on.
Yeah,
there's some good flags already, isn't there? Like,
yeah,
you know. Wales is a great flag.
Wales is the best flag, isn't it?
Got a dragon on it.
Yeah,
like, yeah. Maybe I'll just give it to Wales. Okay. You can't perfect what is already made.
Exactly.
Anthem. Right. It opens with the glass shattering like Stone Cold Steve Austin's entrance theme. Sets the scene. You know we're not here to mess around. And then probably a Grease Megamix version of all the best national anthems that were already there. There's some great ones. Like France has got a good one.
France is one of the best, isn't it?
Wales has got a cracker. Florida Scotland's a rising one.
Like, yeah.
It's a mega mix of all the good ones.
The ending to the Italian one's always a nice flourish, yeah, as well.
And like the mega mix would probably still be shorter than most South American national anthems. Yeah, I think that would be a good one. Glass shatters, big pop. Megamix.
Very good answer. Okay. And lastly, then, what is the best agriculture related social media account to follow in your opinion?
This is a difficult one. Like, because so many people have already been like flagged as being great.
Uh-huh.
Like I think a big one, like if anybody connects with like one person in agriculture, I think probably Doug Avery is a really good person.
Yeah.
Like that was kind of one of the first times I listened to somebody from like, you know, from the same kind of,
yeah,
background. Obviously, it's a different part of the world, but like, this is a grown man farming, talking about what he'd been through.
Yeah,
he cried at least twice, and it's a miracle I've got through this without crying. Like, it's a big thing. Like, that was a big thing for me listening to your podcast with him.
Yeah,
like, and he said he does so much to raise awareness. Doug probably.
Yeah, he's such a great guy. So I was lucky enough to meet him last year when he came over doing his speaking tour, and he's exactly who he says he is, if you know what I mean. He's just so open and friendly and warm, you know. He's just a great guy. He's really trying to help people. And
yeah, I think that's great. He's saving people's lives. Like,
yeah. Without a doubt he is. I mean, the amount of messages I had on the back of that podcast from people who said hearing that has just changed their life. That's a brilliant answer. Doug's fantastic. So cool. All right then, James.
Sweet.
It's been really, really good to speak to you. We've been sort of mates on social media for a long time, so it's really nice to speak to you in person.
Yeah, I know. It's crazy, isn't it?
Yeah, I know. And all the best with Farm Boy Brews, and I'm really looking forward to following along and seeing how it goes over the next few years.
Smashing. Thank you very much. Cheers for having me.
Cheers, James. And to everyone at home, thanks for listening, and I hope to see you next time. I've been Will Evans. This has been Rock and Roll Farming. Thank you and good night. If there's news, keep it tight.